Chapter 18. Gauntlet, Infiltration, Dark Dreams. Bryngar smiled as the shuttle shuddered, spirals of flak and countermeasures hammering against its hull. Rujveld and the Bloodclaws sat in the tight crew compartment with him. They were strapped down in their shuttle couches, braced across the shoulders, chest and waist. The engines were screaming, and intermittent flashes from the explosions outside threw sharp light into the compartment. The small vessel was armoured, but it wasn't designed to take this punishment. Every bolt and stanchion was straining with the speed.
"Do you hear it, lads?"
he roared above the din, utterly at ease. His blood claws, even Rujveld, looked back, perplexed.
"It is the call to combat," he told them proudly. "Those are the arms of Mother Fenris. That's the embrace of war."
The Wolfguard howled, and the blood claws howled with him. Beyond the vision slits, it and several other shuttles soared through the void towards the furious abyss. Deployed before the suicide attack, the Wrathful's feint had given them the time they needed to close the gap. It had provided a chance to reach the gaping apertures of the vessel's torpedo tubes before being scattered into debris by its guns. Dorsal guns pulsed and rocked in their turrets as the furious abyss sought to obliterate the attacker's force. In the third shuttle, Cestus saw three of his sister vessels explode under a hail of flak. They broke and split apart, their desperate speed abruptly arrested as if they were a sailboat breaking up on the rocks of some ragged cliffline. The bodies of naval armsmen spilled from the crew compartments, frozen in spasms of pain as they were exposed to the void. Three of his battle brothers were alongside the Ultramarine captain, Lexinal, Piteron, and Excelinor, helping to fill up the compartment with their armoured bulk. They stared impassively into space as the flash of explosions was thrown through the viewports and the armoured hull shook. Their lips moved as they swore silent oaths of moment. Cestus did the same, watching three more shuttles shredded apart by heavy turret fire. "Come on!" he urged through gritted teeth, the gaping maw of the torpedo aperture getting ever closer. "Come on!"
"Impact in 1 minute," said the vox from the shuttle's pilot. "1 minute from mother's love," shouted Bryngar, taking a firm grip on Felltooth.
Embarkation would need to be swift. There could be enemy forces already in position to repel any boarders. For a moment, he wondered whether or not Cestus had made it through the fusillade. Putting the thought out of his mind, he took up the battle cry once more. They were almost in.
"She's waiting for us there, Mother Fenris, Mother of War." "Mother of War!" yelled the Blood Claws. "Mother of War! Mother of Hate!"
A few feet from the aperture, a stray round struck the left aerofoil of the shuttle and it spiraled wildly out of control. Exploding shrapnel shattered the front viewing arc. The sound of breaking armor glass could even be heard in the troop compartment. The pilot died with a shard of hot metal in his neck before the icy cool of space froze him and his desperate co-pilot to their flight couches. Bryngar's shuttle dipped sharply away from the aperture and downward into another void entirely. A shuttle exploded, its nose sheared off by a shell casing thrown out of the furious abyss's gun decks. The remaining craft looped up beneath the battleship's ventral surface, the valleys and peaks of the city-sized ship streaking past. Cestus saw another vessel explode, the bursting shrapnel shredding much of its frontal arc. It dipped, engines blazing ineffectually, and fell downward until it was lost from view behind a slab of crimson hull. Ahead, the torpedo apertures were closing.
"More speed!"
Cestus roared into his helmet vox. The blazing shuttle engines screeched even louder. A snatched glimpse through the viewport showed a third shuttle banking sharply in an attempt to avoid the flak fire and arrow back towards the battleship. Its retro engines flared as it braked. It didn't slow fast enough and slammed into the hull beside the torpedo aperture. The fat metal body crumpled under the impact and split. Broken bodies were cast into the void. They were wearing the blue armour of the Ultramarines. "Safrax and Amrix are dead," thought Cestus bitterly. Twisting sharply, the shuttle found a way through the rapidly diminishing aperture. As the furious abyss swallowed them, Cestus thought he heard the explosions of the shuttles following them as they crashed against the sealed hull.
"Brace!"
yelled the pilot. Tortured metal boomed. Cestus was thrown against the restraints of his grav couch and felt them stretch and pull against his cuirass. A terrible twisting, howling sound, like a metal earthquake, filled the ultramarine's ears.
"Umbilicals away!"
said the pilot's voice. The hatch in the roof of the passenger compartment slid open. White vapour filled the shuttle.
"Pressurizing!"
shouted the pilot. Cestus knew what was next, and hammered the icon on his chest that would disengage the harness. It came apart quickly, and he was on his feet, his battle brothers beside him. Excelinor, Pyteron, and Lexinol, two with bolters low slung, and another carrying a plasma gun. They would have to be enough. Cestus checked the load in his bolt pistol and unsheathed his sword, thumbing the activation stud that sent frantic lines of power coursing through the blade.
"Courage and honour!"
he yelled, and his battle brothers returned the battle cry. Explosive bolts detonated like gunshots. The second hatch was flung open, and the long, dark throat of the torpedo tube opened up above them. Cestus stormed through the short umbilicus, through the hatch, and into the tube. It sloped upwards and was wide enough for an Astartes to walk with his head bowed. Its ribbed metal interior was caked in ice. The shuttle had pumped air into it, and the vapour in that air had frozen instantly.
"Move!"
ordered the ultramarine captain, and headed upwards. As Cestus led the way up the torpedo tube, the sounds of thundering guns and shell impacts echoed dimly through the structure of the furious abyss, a terrible chorus welcoming them onto the ship. Cestus saw light ahead, the fires of a forge. He had his bolt pistol up in front of him, ready to fire. The light was coming through a thick armor glass window in a heavy hatch, sealing the far end of the tube.
"Charges!"
he ordered. Excelinor and Pyteron reacted quickly, planting a cluster of crack grenades around the weak points of the hatch. Charges primed, the Astartes retreated as one. A few feet from the entrance, Cestus bellowed,
"No!"
A muffled explosion radiated through the tube, echoing off the concave interior, and the hatch fell away in a shower of sparks and fire. Combat protocols and stratagems learned when he was a neophyte and honed in countless conflicts throughout the Great Crusade cycled through Cestus's battle-attuned mind. Bursting onto the ship, the ultramarines found themselves amidst the massive workings of an ordnance deck. Torpedo cranes, ammunition and fuel hoppers, cavernous spaces crisscrossed with gantries and crowded with gangs of sweating menials were all in abundance. With tactical precision, the Astartes fanned out. Cestus drove forward with Lexinol, the punch of his battle brother's plasma gun backing up the ferocity of the ultramarine captain at close quarters. A group of deckhands came at them with a clutch of heavy tools. Cestus swept low through their clumsy attacks and rose quickly, cutting through two with a savage crisscross strike and killing a third with a headbutt. Barking fire from his bolt pistol put pay to two more. An actinic flash sent the temperature warnings in his battle helm spiking as a beam of plasma ignited a fuel hopper. Fire blossomed in plumes of orange and white, twinned with billowing smoke. A squad of rushing armsmen were incinerated in the blaze, and the heavy stubber mount, hastily erected above, was thrown to oblivion. Left and right, Excelinor and Pyteron let rip with their bolters, creating a deadly crossfire that shredded anything that dared to advance through it. They surged steadily into the deck, dispatching targets with brutal efficiency. But these were only ratings and armsmen. Cestus knew that the Astartes of the Wordbearers would be coming. They had to act quickly and disable the Cyclonics before the real threat arrived. Without the destruction of Formaska, the Wordbearers could not fulfill their plan and get close enough to Macragge to unleash the viral strain. His super-advanced mind skipping ahead to the tactical tasking to come, Cestus almost missed the scarred-faced officer flying at him with a power mace. This one was Astartes, although he wore a half-armor variant of full battle plate. Most of the bottom half of his face was destroyed and had been replaced with a metal grill. Deep pink scar lines ran like fat veins up his jaw and across his cheekbones.
"Quail before the might of a word!"
he bellowed, voice metallic and resonant through the augmetics. Cestus parried a deft swing of the mace with his power sword. Arcs of miniature lightning danced across the two weapons as they were locked in a brief pyrotechnic struggle. The ultramarine broke away and brought up his bolt pistol, only for the grill-faced word-bearer to smash it out of his grasp. Pain lanced through Cestus's fingers, even though his armour bore the brunt of the blow, numbing his shoulder.
"Logar will guide us to victory," snarled the word-bearer,
allowing his fervour to fuel his swings, though they dulled his accuracy. Cestus wove out of the death arc from an overhand smash designed to finish him, and brought his blazing blade onto the word-bearer's bare head. Slicing through flesh, bone, and eventually armour, he sheared the warrior in two, the corpse flopping on either side of the blow.
"Now that Gilliman is righteous," Cestus snarled,
gritting back the pain to reclaim his fallen pistol. Rearmed, he drove on into the building firestorm, focused on the killing.
"Where are they?" demanded Zadkiel. "All over the gun decks," came the reply from one of Malforian's subordinates.
In the weapon master's absence, Zadkiel assumed that he was dead or otherwise incapacitated.
"Reports say that Astartes..."
"They'll be going for the torpedo payload," said Zadkiel, mainly to himself.
The Admiral turned his attentions to his helmsmaster.
"Sakharov, are we in position to launch?"
"Yes, my lord, but we cannot deploy the torpedoes while the deck is contested."
Zadkiel swore beneath his breath.
"Reskill," he snarled into the throne box with growing annoyance.
The sergeant commander responded after a moment's pause.
"I'm calling up the hunt for our interloper. Gather your brethren and head for the ordnance decks at once. Destroy any Astartes you find on that deck. Do you understand?"
Reskill replied in the affirmative, and the voxlink died.
"If the attack is to be delayed, I will return to my sanctum," said Magos Guriod,
already blending away into the darkness.
"Do as you must,"
Zadkiel muttered, his agitation obvious, the veneer of calm ever slipping.
"Ixalon,"
he snarled into the vox, a plan forming in his mind.
"My lords,"
the sibilant voice of the chaplain replied.
"Wake the supplicants."
There was no need to spare the supplicants. The furious abyss had reached its destination. The mission was over. Their role had been to help with the manipulation of the warp and fend off attacks against the ship. Zadkiel's order meant using them to destruction. The streams of nutrients were replaced with psychoactive drugs. Restraints snapped apart and cortical simulators crackled, waking the supplicants from their comatose state to halfway between sleep and waking, where sensations and nightmares alike were real. Some of the supplicants, the ones whose mouths and throats still worked, moaned and mewled as they slithered out of their restraints onto the floor. Some convulsed as unfamiliar impulses flooded their muscles. One or two died, their hearts finally giving out. As part of his chaplain's attire, Ixalon drew a heavy scarlet cowl over his battle helm to prevent excess psychic energy from staining his mind, and moved carefully among the walking supplicants, inspecting readouts and checking for swallowed tongues. One by one, he switched off the inhibitor circuits, the loops of psychoactive material that kept the supplicants' minds from feeding back into the furious abyss. The cogitators hooked into the debased creature's consciousness fed them the image of the ship's prow, the engineering works behind the plasma lance, and the ordnance decks below. Finally, the supply of stupefying narcotics and soothing brainwave instigators was cut off, and the supplicants were given their last silent orders. Cestus sprayed a gantry with bolt of fire. Bodies plummeted and crumpled against his fury. The ultramarines had gained a foothold on the primary ordnance deck, but Cestus could still see no sign of the space wolves. He hoped that they had not shared the same fate as Saphrax. The schematic, as witnessed in the vision, bestowed upon him by Motep, filled his eidetic memory. The cluster of cyclonics destined for Formasca was at the end of the deck, doubtless in mid-transit to the torpedo apertures. The viral payload was secured in a drop chamber in the hull. There was no way to get to it. They would have to hobble the word-bearer's plan at its first juncture. Barking fire from a pair of pintle-mounted cannons set up on a loading platform above had the ultramarines pinned for a moment. Cestus's battle brothers regrouped behind a pair of empty fuel bowsers and the housing of a torpedo crane. Lexinal, plasma gun cradled in his gauntlets, slid in beside Cestus.
"What now, Captain?"
he asked, as the barrage above them intensified. Cestus memorized an open stretch of deck, and then the huge metal cliff face of the Furious Abyss's prow, broken by the loading mechanisms and the torpedo tubes. He visualized an industrial tangle on the other side, including giant hoppers stacked with further munitions and the rearing masses of arming chambers where yet more ordnance was stored.
"We have to clear the deck and then get to the munition store and deploy our melter bombs," he replied. "What about Bryngar?"
Lexinal asked, using a break in the fusillade to fire off a snapshot that bathed the loading platform in superheated plasma. The screams died and the raging battled in.
"Once we take out the cyclonics, we link up with whoever is left and do what damage we can," said Cestus, once Lexinal had resumed cover. The Ultramarine nodded his understanding.
Cestus relayed the same order through his helmet vox on a discrete frequency in Ultramar battle cant to Pyteron and Excelinor. The two battle brothers flanked the captain's position, heavy-duty munitions crates in front of them being chipped apart by persistent fire. Cestus glanced between the two bowsers. The furious crewmen in dark scarlet overalls and fatigues had been hit hard by the shock of the assault. Dozens of them lay dead around the torpedo hatches or shot down from the gantries and cranes. The Astartes had exacted a heavy toll, but the enemy were regrouping, and reinforcements covered their losses in short order. There was no time to delay.
"On me!" Cestus cried. "Battle formation, Theta Epsilon! McCrag in ascendance!"
He vaulted the bowser, bolt pistol flaring and lasgun impact spattered his cuirass. Cestus held his sword in salute stance in front of his face, and the upright blade deflected energy blasts from his battle helm. Twin bolters blazed, cross-shaped muzzle flashes glaring, as Excelinor and Pyteron moved in staggered battle formation to Cestus's left. Lexinal took the right flank, firing his plasma gun in controlled bursts to prevent the deadly weapon from overheating. Towards the last third of the deck, they broke up, each taking a channel into the industrial tangle of machinery. Troops of armsmen had mobilized and came at Cestus with shock mauls and lengths of spiked chain. The Ultramarine captain cut them down, Gilliman's name a mantra on his lips. Amidst the killing, he noticed an access portal to the ordnance deck, and wondered why the word-bearers Astartes had not yet shown themselves.
"Link up and force through to the cyclonics," Cestus ordered through his helmet vox as he moved into a labyrinth of munitions.
His battle brothers obeyed, and together they converged on a pair of cyclonics, still harnessed in their mobile racking. Shots spattered from gantries above, most of the las bolts and hard rounds smacking into cranes and clusters of machinery. Cestus saw a lucky shot ricochet from Lexinor's breastplate, and he staggered. A second burst from a heavy cannon somewhere above them raked his leg greave, and he was down. Out of the corner of his eye, Cestus saw a group of armsmen converging on the prone ultramarine. A las bolt clipping his pauldron, Cestus twisted as he ran, slamming a fresh magazine in his bolt pistol and discharging a furious burst into the armsmen. Two disappeared in a red haze, another crumpled to the ground, nursing the wet crater in his stomach. Cestus didn't see the rest. Lexinal was getting to his feet when a round struck an active fuel bowser. The resulting explosion engulfed the Astartes in coruscating flame, the blast wave throwing him halfway across the deck. The Ultramarine captain averted his gaze, muttering a battle oath, and refocused ahead.
"Deploy incendiaries!" Cestus ordered
when they finally reached the first batch of cyclonics. Pyteron unclipped a melter bomb from his armor, disengaging the magna clamp that kept it in place. Excelinor provided covering fire with his bolter.
"Bryngar!"
Cestus shouted into his helmet vox, crouching beside Excelinor as he desperately tried to make contact.
"Bryngar, respond!"
Dead air came back at him. Either the wolf had been killed, or he was in another part of the ship where they couldn't reach him.
"Charges deployed," reported Pyteron.
As he turned to his captain, a heavy round struck him in the neck, piercing his gorget. He clutched the wound with one hand, the melter bomb detonator in the other, and fell to one knee as blood streamed down his breastplate. Larriman cells within Pyteron's body worked hard to slow the bleeding and speed up clotting, but the wound was serious. Even an Astartes' enhanced physiology would be unable to save the battle brother.
"Take it,"
Pyteron said, gurgling his words through blood. Cestus took the detonator, his hands around Pyteron's.
"You will be honored!"
Cestus's voice trailed away as the air around him suddenly turned cold, receptors built into his battle plate, registering a severe drop in temperature. For an awful second, he thought that the deck had depressurized and the void would claim them all. With the cold came screaming, a thousand voices echoing out from the inside of Cestus's head. It was not the void, reaching into the ship to freeze them solid. It was something far worse. Prickling talons probing his mental defences like ice blades reminded Cestus of his earlier encounter with Motep aboard the Wrathful.
"Psyker!"
he hissed with sudden realisation.
"Psyker!"
he shouted this time to get Excelinor's attention.
"We are under attack!"
One of the Furious Abyss's crewmen stumbled out into the open. He clutched an autogun loosely in one hand, his arm hanging down by his side. With his other hand, he appeared to be trying to tear out his own tongue. Cestus shot the man in the chest. He bucked violently and fell still against the deck. He then turned and saw Excelinor slowly raise his bolt gun to his head.
"No!"
Cestus cried, yanking his fellow battle brother to his senses.
"The voice is in my head. I can't stop them,"
whispered Excelinor through his vox, still struggling with his bolter.
"Fight it!"
Cestus snarled at him, feeling the shreds of his own sanity slowly being devoured by the unseen force of the warp. They had to get out, right now. The ultramarine captain seized Excelinor's arm, the world starting to blur around him, and hauled him towards the access portal.
"Come on!"
Cestus breathed as the floor shifted beneath him and the walls began to melt. Try as he might, Cestus could not keep himself from falling into madness. The last thing he remembered was his fist closing on the detonator and the rush of fire.
"They think it's alive," breathed Zadkiel, standing before his command throne. "This ship has been a part of them for so long that the supplicants regard it as an extension of their own bodies. No, it is a host in which they are parasites. There won't be a mind left intact among them. The enemy will be driven mad long before we kill them."
"Your orders, Admiral?"
The voice of Sergeant Commander Reskiel through the throne box interrupted Zadkiel's monologue.
"You have gained the area outside of the ordnance deck?"
he asked, imagining the warriors of Reskiel looming in the corridor intersections.
"Yes, my lord,"
Reskiel answered. Just prior to entering the ordnance deck, the sergeant commander and his warriors had been ordered to secure the exits, Zadkiel having no desire for his forces to be caught up in the psychic attack.
"Although a massive detonation destroyed much of the tertiary access points, as yet we have been unable to break through,"
Reskiel added.
"Is it possible that the Astartes escaped the deck?"
The irritation in Zadkiel's voice obvious, even through the voxlink. There was a short pause as Reskiel considered his response.
"It is possible, yes." "Find them, Reskiel. Do it or do not return to my bridge."
Zadkiel cut the voxlink abruptly. The Admiral turned to a secondary force of word-bearers who had assembled behind him.
"Secure the ordnance deck, port and starboard access portals. Get in there and recover what is left of our cyclonic payload."
"Yes, my lord,"
said a chorus of voices from the assembled word-bearers.
"Do so now!"
Zadkiel raged, and the clattering sounds of booted feet erupted behind him as the word-bearers deployed. The infiltrators had to be stopped. Despite the psychic assault, Zadkiel needed to be sure that any further loose ends had been tied up. Nothing must prevent the bombardment against Formaska. Without it, the rest of the plan could not proceed. He would not allow his soul to be forfeit from Cor Faron's rage at his failure. Success was inevitable. It had to be. It was written. Macragge's natives, the people who had been there before the Emperor's Great Crusade had rediscovered them, had believed in a hell that was very specific in its cruelties. Its circles each held a certain breed of sinner, all suffering punishments appropriate to their misdeeds. The further in a dead man went, the more horrible and varied his punishments became, until the very worst of the worst, traitors to Macragge's battle kings and those who had betrayed their own families, were held in the very centre in a series of torments that a living mind could not comprehend, and upon which the legends refused to speculate. Those beliefs had survived alongside the imperial truth as folk tales and allegories. Macragge's circles of hell were the subject of epic verse, cautionary tales, and colourful curses. Cestus was, at that moment, in the circle of hell reserved for cowards.
"Run!" shouted the taskmaster. "You ran from everything! You sacrificed everything to run! Run now as you did in life! Never stop!"
Cestus was blinded by tears. His hands and feet screamed at him, cut to tatters. Behind him, A miniature sun rolled towards him, blistering the skin on the back of his torso and legs. It was relentless, never slowing, as it ground its way along the vast circular track, bounded by walls of granite, its light flickering against the stalactites hanging from the cave ceiling overhead. The floor was covered in blades, swords dropped by failed soldiers as they fled the battlefield. As the ball of fire approached, the sinners fled, tearing themselves on the blades to escape the fire. Their punishment was to flee forever. Cestus remembered being told of this hell by drill sergeants on Macragge in the half-remembered time before Gilliman's Legion had taken him from among hundreds of supplicants to be turned into an ultramarine. This hell was halfway through the levels of hell, for while cowards were despised on Macragge, theirs was a pathetic sin, a sin of failure, and not comparable to the treachery of murder punished closer to hell's heart. It compounded the punishment not only to suffer, not only to know the weight of failure, but to be reminded that even in sin a coward was lacking. Cestus stumbled and fell. Steel bit into his hands, his knees and his chest. A blade slid through the softer skin of his lips, and he tasted blood. He coughed, desperate for it to end. It felt like he had been there for years, the relentless sun driving him on. The taskmaster was a drill sergeant of Macragge, the same kind of man who had ordered him to march and fight and strive as a child. Cestus remembered the fear of failure, of letting his betters down. He got to his feet, and somehow the flesh was still screaming. "I am not a coward!" he gasped. "Please, I am not a coward!" The taskmaster's whip lashed down. It was a tongue of flame from the sun, scoring a red-black line of agony against Cestus's back.
"You all but murdered your battle brother because you feared to take his place," the taskmaster shouted. "You doomed your fellow warriors because you feared failure. And now you beg for your just punishment to end? What are these but the actions of a coward? And you wore the colours of Gilliman. What shame you have brought to your legion." "I have never run," yelled Cestus. "Not once. I never backed down. I never turned from the enemy. Fear never made my choice." "Do you deny?" shouted the taskmaster. "I deny. I deny you. The imperial truth has no room for hells. The only hells are those we make for ourselves. Another lifetime, Lysimachus Cestus, and you will break."
The sun roared closer. It swelled up, angry and orange. Dark spots flared on its surface. Flaming tongues licked out at Cestus, searing the soles of his feet, the backs of his legs. One wrapped around his face, and he moaned as it burned through his skin, his cheek and nose, his ear. Cestus fought to escape, but the blade snagged him. One leg was trapped by hooks between the bones, and he felt steel scraping along his shin, flaying skin and muscle away. One hand was stuck too, pierced through by the barbed head of a spear.
"I am not a coward!"
yelled Cestus. He tore himself free of the bladed ground, muscle and blood sloughed away.
"I know no fear!"
He turned around and walked on what remained of his feet into the heart of the sun. Admiral Kaminska sat in her command throne in front of the blast doors leading to the bridge of the Rothful. The doors were closed, the bridge sealed off against the secondary explosions racking the ship. Another huge explosion thundered up from the generatoria deep in the stern. The Rothful was breaking up. Formaska's weak gravity well was slowly dragging it into a death spiral. There, upon the barren rock, they would be broken. That was if a catastrophic reactor collapse didn't destroy the ship completely first. Kaminska felt curiously calm as they drifted through the void, completely at the whim of gravity. There was still a trace of underlying disquiet at the edge of her senses, however, as if the feeling she had experienced before had remained. But she'd become inured to it. She had known when Cestus proposed his plan and spoke of sacrifice that this would be her last mission. She wore her full admiral's regalia and had instructed all of her bridge staff to do the same. There would be honour in this final act. They had fought a giant in the form of the furious abyss, and they had lost. But like the fly irritates the bison, perhaps it would be enough to distract their enemy long enough for the angels of the Emperor to do what they must.
"Helm's mistress," said Kaminska, her eyes on the forward view screen and space as scattered debris from her ship spiraled slowly past. "Dismiss the bridge crew, yourself included. You are to evacuate the Wrathful at once and take the savior pods. May fortune favor you in the void."
"I'm sorry, Admiral. I cannot speak for the rest of the crew, but I will not obey that order,"
answered Venkmeyer. Kaminska whirled in her command throne and fixed her helm's mistress with an icy glare. "I am your captain, and you will do as I bid," she said.
"I request to remain on board the Wrathful and go down with the ship,"
Venkmeyer responded. For a moment, Kaminska looked as if she were about to erupt into a fit of apoplexy at such insubordination, but the determined expression on her helm's mistress' face made the ice soften and melt. Kaminska saluted Venkmeyer and her bridge crew.
"You do me great honor."
Kaminska was about to smile proudly when the feeling of unease intensified, and she realized it was emanating from her helm's mistress.
"No, Admiral,"
Venkmeyer replied, and from the obvious demeanour of the crew around her, they were all in agreement.
"We are honoured."
Venkmeyer raised her hand to return the naval salute, when she suddenly clutched her stomach. She grimaced in pain and fell to the deck, convulsing violently. Helmsmate Kant, standing close by, went immediately to her aid.
"Officer Venkmeyer!"
shouted Kaminska, getting off her throne to go to her helm's mistress's aid. She stopped short when she saw her breath misting in front of her. A profound chill filled the bridge, as if it was suddenly converted into a meat locker. Eyes wide as Venkmeyer bucked and thrashed, she drew her naval sidearm. Armed or not, it wouldn't matter. It was already too late for them all. Motep was meditating in the isolation chamber, his gaze fixed on the reflective surface of the speculum in his wand. Abruptly, his glazed expression bled away, and he was at full awareness again. It was time. The Thousand Sun got to his feet. His jailers had allowed him to wear his battle plate, and the heavily armoured boots resonated against the metal floor. He approached the locked cell door and raised his hand. Chanting eldritch words in a sibilant tongue, the door dissolved before Motep's open palm, disintegrating back into atoms. The Astartes stepped through and were struck immediately by a profound sense of emptiness. The corridors were utterly bereft of life. He knew the Wrathful had only a skeleton crew, but this was something else. An absence of existence that smacked of the otherworldly. Motep drew the psychic hood over his head, securing it firmly to the scarab-shaped clasps on his gorget. He drew the wand out before him and activated it. The small stave extended into the spear again, and a small crackle of energy played down its length, as if reacting to the air around it. This ghost ship in which he walked had a phantom. Motep knew it for certain. Calmly, the Thousand Sun walked down the narrow passageways that would lead him to the bridge, where he knew his destiny awaited. The lines of fate had been very specific. This was the path he had chosen, despite the efforts of the Other to try and change his mind, to will him into divine madness. Motep reached the bridge without encountering a single soul. It was as if the crew had been devoured utterly. He moved his hand in a swift chopping motion, and the sealed blast doors opened, venting a small cloud of pressure. Carnage greeted him as the Thousand Suns stepped into the chamber. It was as if the bleeding heart of the Wrathful had been laid open upon the surgeon's slab. The heart of the ship, of course, was its crew. Their blood and viscera painted the walls, an incarnadine portrait rendered by an obscene and demented artist. Skin was flayed from bone, organs eviscerated. A bizarre skeleton ribbed the walls and ceiling, the concomitant elements harvested from the slain crew members, changing the bridge into a macabre ossuary. Motep ignored the abattoir stink assailing his nostrils, even through his battle helm, the wet redness of the chamber cast starkly in the intermittent flare of warning lamps. He saw Admiral Kaminska slumped against the floor, a pistol in her hand.
"Get out of her,"
she breathed, blood flecking her lips as she spoke. Standing before them both, an insane grin etched upon her face, was Helm's Mistress Venkmeyer. She was bloody, and her toes, pointing downward in her boots, just scraped the floor as if she were a marionette held limply by its strings.
"Get out!"
Kaminska urged again, struggling to stand, as she fired her pistol on empty at the abomination that used to be her second-in-command. The Venkmaier puppet lashed out, her arm extending as if it were made of clay, and sheared off Kaminska's head with its talon-like fingers. The Admiral dead, the creature's arm shrank back into position, glistening with blood.
"You dwell within," said Motep calmly, taking a step forward as he mustered his psychic resolve. "Come forth."
The Venkmaier puppet grinned back at him.
"I am a servant of the Crimson Eye. I am a vassal of Magnus the All-Knowing," said Motep, taking another step as he reaffirmed the grip on his spear. "Come forth."
Eerie quiet had descended like a veil, and the temperature readings in the Thousand Suns helmet were registering sub-zero. He saw miniature icicles of hoarfrost building on his gauntlets. A faint white patina was emerging slowly on his cuirass as he advanced. Still, the Venkmaier puppet did not answer.
"I know you are here," cried Motep, his voice resonating around the bridge. "You have been here all along. You cannot hide from me. I have the eye of Magnus."
Motep leveled his spear at Venkmaier, as if she was a wild beast poised to attack.
"Come forth," he hissed,
and the briefest flash of recognition appeared on Venkmaier's face, but was swallowed by agony. The thing that used to be the helmsmistress opened its mouth, and the jaw distended to reveal a hollow maw of deep red. A gush of blood spewed outwards, coating Motep in its sickly gore. The Thousand Sun did not falter against the crimson tide, and held his ground. The sound of cracking bone filled the air as Venkmaier's spine was ripped out of her back and arced up and over her head like a scorpion's sting. Her neck snapped, and her jaw distended further, tendons severing. Beneath her tarnished uniform, her ribs writhed as a shape fought to free itself from the flesh and bone sack of her body. Convulsions racked her, and the head came apart in a shower of gore and matter. A shape of raw muscle emerged, unfolding and opening like a bloody flower. Venkmaier's hands became claws, and enhanced musculature spread across her ravaged body in a riot. Wet and pink, the muscle swelled until a hard black carapace formed over it. What had once been Venkmaier, little more than a conduit for something to wrench itself into existence, grew exponentially until it had to crouch to fit into the chamber. The nubs of horns sprouted from a bulbous head, from which eyes like pits of tar blinked maliciously. A slit ran across the near-featureless head, like the cut from a surgeon's scalpel, and a wide mouth opened from it, revealing rows of razor teeth. Talons like scythe blades scraped along the floor from distended simian-like arms. A long, sinewy tail spilled from its back, made of tough, muscle-bound vines and twisted spine.
"There you are," said Motep, looking up at the towering abomination. "Ursaric."
It was a thing of the warp, a demon made flesh, and it stared at the Thousand Sun, allowing its malign presence to wash over him.
"I am gorged,"
the thing gurgled, drooling blood as its mouth deformed to make the words.
"But there is always room for more."
Motep knew then that the beast had been aboard the ship for weeks, devouring souls to gather its strength. It had been the temptation in his head that had almost made him slip into madness. It had fanned the flames of the Space Wolf's enmity against him. It had fostered the madness that had claimed the lives of so many of the crew. Motep brandished his spear, and a corona of crackling energy arced over it.
"Feeding time is over," he promised.
The seventh circle of hell, two steps closer to the heart of damnation, was for rebels, those who had cast off the natural order, who had defied their betters or refused to accept their place in the world. In ages past, those who had taken up arms against Macragge's battle kings had found themselves here, alongside children who had turned against their parents, and deviants and agitators of every kind. It was a machine, a vast, complex, endless construction of cogs and steel that churned through the seventh circle. Rebels had failed to realize that they were required to be a part of a larger machine, and so the seventh hell was to educate them in their place. Sinners became a part of that machine, bent and stretched into component parts. The machine never let them alone, always twisting them or thrusting a piston through them, until they gave up their individuality in the hope of ending the pain. The seventh hell was not just a punishment. It was a lesson, and it would break the pupil's spirit in the telling. Cestus's spine was bent backwards. Spurs of metal were slid in at his wrists, down through the muscle of his arms and into his chest. Metal merged with the back of his skull and snapped it back every few seconds as the teeth of a cog hammered by behind him. This circle of hell was dark and dripping with blood. Other sinners were everywhere, their bodies so deformed by the machine that they were little more than cogs or cams of gristle and bone, facial features barely discernible. A few others were new, and their bodies were still resisting. They screamed, bones poking through their skin and muscles ripping.
"Cestus!"
cried someone above him. Cestus tried to look back, grimacing as metal pushed through the skin of his scalp. It was Antigues. The ultramarine had been stripped of his armour and was bolted spread-eagled to a cog. His limbs were being forced around to follow the circle of the cog. His shins and forearms were being bent into curves, and they looked like they would shatter at any moment. Another smaller cog inside the larger was fixed to its back, slowly twisting his spine. Already his torso looked lopsided, and his head had been forced down onto one shoulder.
"Antigues," gasped Cestus. "I had thought you were lost."
"I am,"
said Antigues, a brief lull in his suffering before the agony returned.
"So are you. Fathers of Macragge, this pain. I cannot suffer it much longer. If only there were some new death, some oblivion."
"This is the hell for rebels," said Cestus. He felt a note of panic in his mind as the spurs in his forearms and chest began to force apart, drawing his arms behind him.
"We are not rebels. We were always loyal sons of Macragge. We served the imperial truth until the end. Nothing was worth more to us than our duty."
"Your duties were on terror," said Antigues. "You took a ship and left your post. You took us all on your mission to Macragge and damned the rest. There was no duty that told you to gather your fleet and abandon terror. That was your personal crusade, Cestus. That was your rebellion."
"I had a duty to Macragge and to my battle brothers. Everything I did because it was demanded of me by my legion. Loyalty drove me on."
"Loyalty, Cestus, to yourself."
Antigues threw his head back and screamed. One leg shattered, snapping at the shin. The other one was wrenched apart at the knee. A shoulder followed, the bone torn out of the socket. Skin split, and Antigues's arm was held on only by a few tendons. His eyes rolled back and his breathing turned ragged. An Astartes could take pain that would kill a normal man, but even Antigues had his limits.
"Brother," shouted Cestus, "hold on, do not leave me. Fight!"
Cestus's part of the machine hummed with power diverted to the engines chugging away beneath him. He felt his arms forced back further and a sharp pressure in his back. His head was forced back too, snapping back and forth as it was ratcheted tight into the top of his spine. The pressure in his chest was tremendous, and Astartes' ribs were fused into a breastplate of bone, and Cestus could feel them grinding as it made ready to split down the middle. The pain grew, and the ultramarine could feel nothing else, only the awful inevitability of his breaking.
"I am no rebel,"
shouted Cestus, drawing resolve from a pit of strength he didn't know he had.
"I only serve. My legion is my life. I do not belong in this hell of Macragge, and so this hell is not real. I am no rebel. I defy you all."
Somewhere, a taskmaster turned a rusting wheel, and the machine shuddered with power. Cestus's chest split open. He screamed. Hot air shrieked through his organs. His legs kicked frantically and both his arms snapped. His neck broke, but the pain did not die, and his body was forced to accept the form of the machine.
"I defy you,"
gasped Cestus with his last breath.